This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. It is Mira Sivasuthi. The eyes are the windows to the soul, so they say. But in practice, they really are more like the windows to our health. Discussing the links between our eyes and systemic diseases this afternoon is Dr. Kenneth Fong, consultant ophthalmologist and retinal surgeon. Our phone lines are open. If you have a question for him, the number to call is 0377 109,000. Welcome to the show, Dr. Ken. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you, Mira.
It's Chinese New Year.
Yes, well, I'm having dinner in my parents' house in KL tonight, so I don't have to drive very far.
But thank you. Thank you so much for coming in. You know, it's an accurate statement to say that the eyes are the window to our health. But how accurate, really, Dr. Fong?
It's becoming more and more accurate, actually. I mean, I always go back to the saying that, you know, the sayings from the past are very accurate. You know, like eyes are windows to our soul, and our soul literally connects to our health. And more research has shown that we can detect a lot of systemic diseases just by examining the eyes and predict how our health is going to be in the future.
Okay. And when you talk about systemic diseases, what are they? How would you describe it?
Well, anything. I mean, basically, the most common is high blood pressure, diabetes, high cholesterol. These are the triad of lifestyle-related diseases, the holy trinity of diseases that afflicts everybody nowadays. Mm-hmm. And these can all be picked up by examining the eye.
Okay, how? How do you do that? I mean, you dilate the eye and what goes on?
Basically, you examine the eye from the front to the back, the cornea, all the way to the back. And starting at the front, you can actually pick up cholesterol deposits at the cornea. For patients with very high levels of cholesterol, they will manifest as a yellowish ring or deposit around the eye.
Is it true? Some people have told me if you have a ring around your pupil, that is a sign that you could have high cholesterol.
Well, precisely. That is what they're referring to.
So physically, you can actually see it.
You have to look very hard. Yes, you can see it. Yes, but usually these people have a family history of very high cholesterol, mm-hmm. and their levels are super abnormal. So we won't be able to pick up the above average ones. Then going more to the back of the eye, which is what I'm very passionate about, the retina. This precious nervous tissue at the back of the eye, full of blood vessels. And what research has shown is that just by looking at the thickness of your blood vessels, so you have your arteries which pump blood to the eye and the veins which drain out blood from the eye. Mm-hmm. If your artery is very narrow, thin, you are at risk of hypertension and stroke. And similarly, if the blood vessels, veins are dilated, so that there's too much blood being blocked up in the system, so your veins are clogged up and they're dilated, similarly, you'll be at higher risk of high blood pressure, cholesterol, high cholesterol and stroke.
And that will be reflected in the retina?
Yes. So what researchers are doing around the world now is just by a simple photograph of your retina, we then put a computer program to measure the blood vessels and the angulation of the blood vessels in your eye, and it will come up with a statistical probability of you having these diseases.
So
and
when I...
Yeah, it's even done in children.
So if I were to come to you tomorrow and say, I'd like to check my eyes, would you just do the normal check, or would I have to tell you, look, doctor, Ken, I want to know more about my health?
Yeah, I mean, most of us, the eye doctors, we can pick up a lot just by looking at the eye. Sometimes I don't need to discuss talk too much with the patient. If I have a look carefully at the eyes, I can sort of pick up what they have. But it's a very subjective thing, that a doctor's opinion. So these new cameras with computer programs to measure the thickness of your blood vessels, these will be a lot more helpful. And this will be useful on a wider population scale. But I have to add, it's not available yet in practice. It's still under research because, it's very expensive to have these programs. But it's a very non-invasive way to look at your health.
So at the moment, what do you work with?
At the moment, we worked with the slit lamp, the microscope to examine the eye. Mm-hmm. We've just bought a new camera that allows us to take a photograph of your entire retina, all 200 degrees of it at the back of your eye without dilating your eye. So that one of the biggest complaints patients have when they visit the eye doctor is having to have these dilating drops in their eyes. After that, they are blurred for hours, they can't drive, they can't read, they're very unhappy about that. So the good news is we have a camera, a non-midriatic camera. It's not even a camera, it's a special confocal scanning laser that manages to image the entire retina right up to the far corners of the eye. And it can pick up a lot of things.
Okay. How often should we come and get our eyes tested?
I think, as I said before, anybody above the age of 40 Should have it once a year because you want to check for glaucoma. Children between 3 to 8 years old should have an annual check. And then if they're not wearing glasses after that, they can go every 2 years. If you're between 20 to 40, like probably what most of your listeners age group, I'm not sure the age demographics, but they probably don't need a regular check unless they have problems.
Okay, but 40 and above, yes, is a must. Yeah. At least get it checked at 40.
Yes.
Are there tests done that are age specific? Would an older person, for example, have to take more tests as compared to someone in the younger age group?
Not really. In the older age groups, we will look carefully for all the other age-related diseases like AMD, cataract, and also glaucoma. Yeah, but we will do exactly the same thing.
For the younger person as well.
Person,
yeah. All right. Are there diseases which may be diagnosed by an ophthalmologist for across the board?
Yeah, I mean, it's quite interesting that we deal with a lot of neurological diseases because the eye is actually part of the brain.
It is. It's an extension of our brain.
Yeah. So I deal very frequently with my neurology and neurosurgical colleagues. Sometimes I pick up patients with swelling of the optic nerve, which may indicate raised pressure in their brain, which this can be caused by a brain tumour or a blockage somewhere in their brain.
Okay.
So then these patients need urgent referrals. In the younger patients, there's a condition called, we don't hear much about actually, called multiple sclerosis. It's very common in the West. But it also happens in Asian countries, and there's a condition called optic neuritis where young patients present with blurring of vision in one eye. Mm-hmm. And very often, nothing can be found. The eye looks apparently normal. But if you examine the optic nerve carefully, there may be a bit of pallor or swelling there. And these patients have what we call demyelination of the optic nerve.
Okay.
And they require steroid treatment and investigations.
And are optometrists or ophthalmologists specifically trained to look out for these diseases?
Yeah, optometrists are trained to prescribe glasses and contact lenses.
Yep.
They can do a basic eye examination, like have a look at the front of the eye and check the eye pressure. But they would not be able to comment on these more rare systemic diseases like the eye doctors or ophthalmologists would do. So usually the optometrist would refer the patient on. For example, if they try glasses and they can't get the patient's vision to improve, they'll send them to the hospital to see the eye doctor.
Okay. So you, for an example, are you specially trained to look beyond the eye and look out for systemic diseases?
Well, all eye doctors have spent easily a couple of years in housemanship and medical officers in medical and surgical specialties. So I did my senior house officership in neurosurgery and neurology. So I'm quite
very
comfortable.
Relevant.
Yeah,
very
I'm
relevant.
Quite comfortable dealing with the neurological aspects. But again, in all ophthalmology eye doctor training schemes, they have to sit for an exam where they have to learn about all these new medical diseases they deal with. So part of the exam questions will be on topics like that.
Okay, yeah. So you have that exposure then.
Yeah.
Is it difficult to say at what stage you could detect diabetes or hypertension?
I think
example?
You can pick it up very early. I mean, just by looking at that retina, you can tell whether a patient's hypertensive or diabetic and how their control is. So, and by showing them the photograph, when we take the photograph and we show the patient, look, you've got bleeding here, your vessels are very narrowed, your risk of stroke is high. I think that has a big impact on them to change their lifestyle.
Okay. Hi, LTY. How are you?
Hello. May I wish you a Happy New Year?
No, Happy New Year to you.
Yeah. And Happy New Year to you, Dr. Ken Fong.
Yeah, Happy New Year.
Hello. How are you?
Very good. Thank you.
Still on the show. It's New Year Eve.
Yeah, I can't say no to Mira.
Yeah, I think you are very conscientious. That is one thing good. There's a positive about you. Okay, today I want to, Dr. Fong, I want to talk about two things, okay? Okay, it's a bit more advanced, okay?
No problem.
Okay, the first one is regarding artificial retina, whereby by using a gadget to enable to contrast images, can you hear me properly?
Yes, we can. Yeah.
To contrast images for the blind, okay?
Mm-hmm.
My second question is, the other thing is about choroideremia.
Mm-hmm.
When gene therapy is involved, that means to say the introduction of a virus to replace the missing gene. That's all I need you to tell us more. Thank you. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, LTY.
Yeah, so artificial retina, we've discussed it last year, but basically, just to recap, there is a device called the Argus Retinal Prosthesis that's been in the market for about 2 years now. And basically, it's a microchip implant that you put on the surface of the retina for patients who have retinitis pigmentosa. So it's an hereditary genetic disease where they have night blindness. And the artificial microchip then communicates with the optic nerve of the eye, and it causes special stimulations on the optic nerve itself, and mm-hmm. your brain has to be trained to perceive these images. So the microchip itself is about 64. The number of chips. The resolution is only 64. It's not very high resolution. So they can make out shapes and possibly faces.
Right. This is for blindness.
Night blindness, retinitis pigmentosa.
What about for the blind? Is that possible?
It depends, because retinitis pigmentosa, they have a disease of the outer retina. Part of the retina is destroyed, but there's another part that's still healthy. So the microchip aims to communicate with a healthier retina. Those patients with macular degeneration, diabetes, or stroke, where their whole retina is affected, this is not suitable for them. It's now commercially available, not in Asia. The nearest is in Saudi Arabia, mm-hmm. where there's a very high incidence of retinitis pigmentosa because of intermarriage between relatives, consanguinity. So the Saudi government has put a lot of money in to develop this retinal prosthesis program for their patients there, which is very good. It's cost about $150,000 per implant.
Per eye,
and they need to undergo 6 months of rigorous training. So it's not easy. So it's not answer to everything. Choroideremia, as LTY asked, is a rare genetic condition where your choroid, the blood vessels in your eye, are thin. And it's a hereditary condition. And researchers in America have developed a way to correct the gene defect. Basically, they put the correct gene in a viral vector, because the virus is very small and it's injected underneath the retina by the surgeon, the retinal surgeon, and the new gene will then integrate with the eye and hopefully improve the function.
That's at research stage?
Yes, at research stage, yes.
Okay, but
yes.
The other one, the artificial retina,
it's already being used. Some people have asked me about whether we're going to bring it in Malaysia. I think it's very unlikely.
Why is that?
Well, number one, it's the cost of it. I mean, our government won't be able to afford it, that's for sure. We have far bigger health issues to deal with. Secondly, the number of retinitis pigmentosa cases are actually quite small. And thirdly, we don't have the support services. We need very good optometry and low vision aid services to be able to train these patients after they've had their surgery. It's a shame if you do a beautiful operation and after that there's no physiotherapy to train them up after that.
To follow up. Yeah. Okay. When we come back, we'll find out more. Sharon, I think we just lost your line. Do give us a call once again. We'll be happy to take your question. Coming up, I want to find out how doctors or ophthalmologists managed before we had all these high-tech equipment. Up next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good afternoon and welcome back. It is The Bigger Picture and it's Mira Sivasuthi. We're discussing systemic diseases and your eyes with Dr. Kenneth Fong, consultant ophthalmologist and retinal surgeon. Our phone lines are open, 0377 109000. If you're on the road, moving out of KL or, you know, doing the last minute shopping, give us a call if you have a question for your eyes. We're discussing, when Dr. Kenneth talks about systemic diseases, we're talking about diabetes, hypertension and things like that, which can be detected by an examination of the eye. Now, in the past, would this then not have been possible without the equipment that you have today?
In the past, we only pick it up when it's very severe. So in the textbooks, they'll talk about the different stages of hypertensive retinopathy, and those will be very, very severe when your blood pressure is sky high and it's really obvious you have a problem. Now, we're taking it one stage earlier, where the researchers, we're using the retinal photographs and using the software to measure your retinal vessels, comparing the thickness of the artery and the vein, and predict whether you're going to get high blood pressure or not in the future. So your blood pressure may be normal at this stage in time, but if I tell you in 10 years' time, your risk of getting hypertension and stroke is about 50%, which is very high, then you can take measures to prevent it.
I see.
So that's the aim of the research in retinal photography and measuring the retinal vessel caliber, which is of the thickness.
Very much more as a preventive measure then.
Yeah.
Hi, Raja. How are you today?
I'm good. Happy New Year to all the Chinese buddies and Malaysians. Okay, Dr. Kenneth, I have a question to you. It's not directly related to the topic, but it's related to the eye itself. Mm-hmm. Me, myself, is basically having this retina gravis on the oval part, whereby it's pretty much I have some sort of, previously doctor says it's kind of lazy eyes and you have some sort of a cross eye kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's only happening on my right side of the eye. Is there any surgery that kind of can correct the alignments of the eyes itself?
So you have a squint, is that right? Your eyes are not straight?
Yes, correct.
Yeah. And how old are you?
I'm 27, diagnosed with it since I was 5.
Yeah, and are you wearing glasses?
I used to be, but no longer wearing it because I don't seem this to be like helping me that much.
Yeah, so the doctor has told you have a lazy eye in one eye, is that correct?
Yes, correct. It's a myasthenia gravis. Correct.
Oh, yeah. Myasthenia gravis is another neurological condition that eye doctors often pick up. Are you on treatment now for myasthenia gravis?
I used to take steroids, prednisolone to make it, I don't know what is it for,
yeah.
And some medication, mestinon and whatnot, but I stopped taking it because it doesn't bring me any value.
Mm.
And some more steroids brings a side impact, which is not good to the body itself.
Yeah.
So I've been living with it without the medication for, I think, more close to 5-10 years.
Did you have the blood test to confirm you have myasthenia gravis?
Yes, yes, I did it in one of the private hospitals.
Yeah, so that's the most important thing because it's very difficult to diagnose. Unfortunately, there's not much eye doctors can do because if we were to operate on your eye muscles and straighten it, the myasthenia gravis may recur later on and cause the muscle to move in a different direction.
Oh,
it's very unpredictable.
I see.
And especially like the most patients have actually your eyelids drooping. So you have very drooping eyelids. And
When it comes to fatigueness, heavy fatigueness, yes. But in a normal condition, not really.
Yeah. So I think, I'm afraid not. This is not something we would want to touch. This is one of the few conditions that we do not want to operate on because we can make it worse.
But the sickness itself, is it widely happen to everybody or
no? It's not very common actually. It's quite rare. It's difficult to diagnose. That's why I asked if you had that specific blood test. If you have the blood test antibodies show that you have those antibodies, that means you definitely have this disease. Then the neurologists, who are the best people to manage it, can then manage you with all the medications.
Thank you very much, Raja. Thank you.
All right,
so it's all about managing it more than going for surgery.
No, and, yeah.
Not really your area, Dr. Ken.
No, we wouldn't want to touch those sort of cases because make it worse.
What might early signs of cancer? Can you detect that through the eyes?
Yes. I'm sad to say I've picked up quite a few patients with cancer in the eye. They often come from elsewhere and the patients are not aware of it. Breast cancer is the most common that can spread to the eye.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the time, the patients are not aware. They might see a shadow in a corner. And then only when we have a good look at the back of the eye, we find deposits of cancer in the retina, underneath the retina.
Rheumatoid arthritis is something else that can be detected through the eye. Who would have thought? Rheumatoid arthritis.
The joints and the eye are actually very closely linked. We pick up a lot of joint problems from the eye. These patients often have dry eyes. They often have red eyes and can be very sore.
Mm-hmm.
If it's very severe, they can get corneal melt. So melting of the cornea and perforation of the cornea in very severe rheumatoid arthritis cases. So I have come across quite a few young ladies, because rheumatoid arthritis is more common in women, who have presented with severe red eyes, and then I did a few blood tests, sent them off to the rheumatologist and confirmed that they do have rheumatoid arthritis.
They do. Yeah. Rheumatoid arthritis is an autoimmune disease.
Yes.
Are there other types of autoimmune diseases that can be detected through the eyes?
Yeah. I mean, the other common one is SLE.
Mm-hmm. Lupus.
Lupus, yeah. That's the masquerade. Lupus can cause all sorts of things in the eye. Retina problems, dry eye problems, redness. Very often when they come, I ask the patients about their systemic. So they think I'm being funny by asking about their passing urine and joint problems and things like that. But actually, we're trying to pick up if they have these other symptoms.
What about AIDS? AIDS can be first diagnosed through presentations in the eye?
AIDS is actually the there's good and bad things about AIDS. I mean, nowadays with the treatment options, eye doctors see much less of these things in the eye. In the past, 10 years ago, when antiretroviral therapy was not so common, we would get what we call opportunistic infections in the eye. So viruses and parasites grow in your eyeball.
As a result of HIV?
Yes, because you're immunosuppressed. But we see much less of it now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hi, Joe. How are you today?
I'm very good.
Hi. Can you hear us?
Yeah, I can. Yes.
Okay.
Very loud and clear.
Your question, Joe.
Okay. It's actually regarding my husband. Mm-hmm. He is wearing glasses for many years now. But the past couple of years, the power of his glasses increased like rapidly and really high. At the same time, his body weight increased quite a lot as well.
Mm-hmm.
Not like the previous few years, but the past 2 years, it's just like really, really high. Because, say, 2010, he was about 90. And then last year, he was 130. So within this time, his glasses, the power of his glasses is like really, really high compared to the previous years that year before that and before that and before that.
Okay.
It just increased rapidly within these 2 years. The same time when his body weight increased really high.
Yes, and your question?
Connecting to that?
Yes, okay. Thank you. Thanks very much, Joe. Would you have a question for Joe, Dr.
Yeah, how old is your husband, Joe?
33.
And what work does he do?
He's a student.
Student? Oh, postgraduate student? So he spends a lot of time in front of the computer.
Subject, so not all the time actually, and 1 week one subject. So other than that, no study, no class.
He's 130 kilograms, you say.
Yeah.
That's very heavy.
From 90, a 90. What? 3 years ago? 2 years ago?
Three years ago.
Thank you, Joe. Dr. Ken will answer.
There's not much link between overweight and myopia. But actually, it's actually more lifestyle. If you are sedentary, sitting around in the office, no exercise, then of course you'll put on weight. At the same time, you're also not using your eyes to see far. So you're reading and looking at the computer all day long. So as I've said before, that increases your myopia. So that can cause it as well. People overweight are also more prone to diabetes. So he could be diabetic. If your sugars are high, you become short-sighted.
Mm-hmm.
So in the short term, I wouldn't worry too much about the eyesight. I'll be worried more about the weight. You need to lose weight. It's a very dangerous thing. I've just downloaded a pedometer on my iPhone.
Well done.
It's a wonderful, wonderful gadget. That's my New Year's resolution, to walk 10,000 steps a day. And I've realized it's actually very difficult.
Yeah.
I only managed 5,000 yesterday.
That's only half.
Yes. And to get 10,000, you actually need to get out of the house, go to the park, and actually walk a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So for the people out there, just realize that it's not easy to achieve the 10,000 steps. That's just recommended to maintain your body weight, not much more to lose the body weight.
That's right.
Yeah.
You know, Google X is developing contact lenses that are able to monitor diabetics' blood sugar levels by testing their tears.
Yep.
You know, are you for such devices?
I think it's a great idea. I mean, there's always it's good. I mean, I think their X Lab in Google is doing wonderful work on this. And they are raising the question of diabetes. It's putting in a mind, because 15% of our population is diabetic. It's frightening. Now, to measure blood sugar in your tears, is that really necessary? I don't think so. You don't really need to know your sugar levels from minute to minute. What you do know is a range throughout the day, after you eat, before you eat. So I think it's helpful for the early stages before your diabetes is controlled to have an idea, because a lot of people have aversion to needles, to pricking.
Yeah.
But actually the needles are very, very fine. You don't feel anything at all. And blood glucose is much more accurate than tears glucose levels.
I'm just thinking your tears would be salty, wouldn't it?
Contain sugar. The chip is very sensitive, and the chip can pick up other things as well, not just glucose levels, sodium levels as well. The only, as eye doctor, the only reservation I have is contact lens. if you're diabetic, you're more prone to getting infections. And if you don't look after the contact lens in your eye, you might get a serious eye infection.
Okay. Any other things that you want to talk about in relation to systemic eye diseases before we go into our Chinese New Year discussion on horses?
Horses.
Can't wait to come to that
one. Yeah, not really. I mean, basically for systemic diseases, when you go and see your eye doctor, don't be surprised if he or she asks you about your joints, your passing urine and things like that. We're not being funny. We're just trying to take a more thorough history, because what we see sometimes in the eye is related to that. And you'll be surprised at what we can pick up.
We are still continuing this discussion on systemic diseases. Our phone lines are open, 0377 109 000. Dr. Kenneth Fong in the studio with us. When we come back, we'll find out more about the horse and how it's has the largest eyes of any land mammal and how that relates to the horse's behavior. Coming up next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good afternoon. It's The Bigger Picture and it's Meera Sivasuthi. Of course, it's Chinese New Year tomorrow. It is the year of the wooden horse. And with me, Dr. Kenneth Fong, consultant ophthalmologist and retinal surgeon. We were discussing systemic diseases and your eyes just now. Our phone lines are still open, 0377 109 000. But we're going to go on to talk about the horse, Dr. Ken. It is a very, very special mammal. You want to tell me about the horse's eyes?
Okay. Now, I'm not a veterinarian, that's for sure. I just thought about this topic because of Chinese New Year tomorrow, and I just thought it off the top of my head. It'd be interesting to do a comparative discussion between humans and animals' eyes. It's always interesting. There are many similarities, okay? It's a mammal, like humans. As you mentioned, it's for the mammal, it has the largest eye of all the land-based mammals. And very similar to the human eye, there's a cornea, the lens, and the retina. The eyelids of the horse is interesting. It's got our eyelids have two layers. Mm-hmm. The horse has three layers. And the third layer is the mystery layer that scientists are not really sure what it does, but we think it secretes tears for the horse. Now, in terms of horse's vision, a lot of people, it's very difficult to examine. Ask a horse to read A, B, C, D, or 1, 2, 3, or read a chart from a certain distance. There's no way you can get any meaningful answer. So we can only, you know, interpret how they are behave in the wild and in reality. So horses have pretty good vision, not as good as humans. They can see, they can read up to 20 over 32. That means at 20 feet, they can read almost right to the bottom. Humans have about 20/20 vision. Mm-hmm. Cats and dogs have better eyesight than horses. But horses can see further away, which is what they need anyway. In the wild, they have to be able to see any prey that's coming to eat them. Interestingly, the field of vision of the horse eyes are located on the side of his head. Mm-hmm. So the field of vision is 350 degrees. The horse can literally see behind it.
Wow.
Yes. So at the same time as going forward, a horse can see what's coming behind it.
Right.
So that's what's special about the horse. Humans, we only have 180 degrees. We only see forward.
Yeah.
Unless you believe in the third eye. But, you know, we can see, we can't see what's behind us.
Yeah.
Yeah. Of course, you get a Google Glass with a mirror, you can see behind you. So basically, that's what's unique about the horse. Now, the next thing to think about is 3D vision, binocular vision. If you take your horse to the TGV and watch Hobbit, can they watch 3G? Can they see in 3D? Mm-hmm. They can. The horse can see in 3D, but it has to lower its head to get both eyes working together at the same time.
Right.
If the horse nose is straight up, looking straight up, both its eyes are not aligned together and they won't be able to give you a 3D, three dimensions.
So they don't need special glasses to see in 3D. They just need to tilt forward a little?
Yeah. And then put the glasses on them. And
oh,
then
you need,
they
do they need,
they
the
do
glasses.
Need a 3D. Everyone needs a 3D glass. Okay. You've not been to a 3D cinema?
I have, but I'm not a horse.
Yeah, but you have to keep it time. Yeah. You have to go and see these 3D movies. They are wonderful. They are really wonderful. Yeah.
I do. Just wondering about the horse, that's all.
Yeah.
Carry on, you were saying.
So basically, when you see a horse galloping, if you bet on horses, you can see them running. I don't, but I've seen them on TV. If you run, you notice their head is bobbing up and down, up and down. So they're actually using that to judge distance and the next step ahead. So they'll be sprinting, their nose will be up, they'll be just running straight ahead, and occasionally their head will go down. And then they'll get a 3D image of any obstacles ahead. For example, if they have to jump over fences, mm-hmm. then their head has to go down, then they'll see the fence. Then the next question comes about, can they see color? Can they see colors like you and I? Mm-hmm. And the question is no. They can only see, humans are trichromats. So we see blue, yellow, and red mm-hmm. as the primary colors. Blue, green, yellow. Yeah. Blue, green, red, yeah. As the primary colors. Whereas horses are dichromats. They only see two colors. So that's why when you see the Olympic Games, the equestrian events, the pillars, the fences are just marked in one color, red and white, or red, black and white, that sort of thing. So the horses can tell it's an obstacle.
I see, okay, yeah.
To differentiate it, yeah.
And how do you do all these studies? How do you know what the horses are actually seeing?
Okay, in terms of the binocular vision, it's quite easy because you just do basic psychophysics on how the eyes align. The how many colors they can see, you just have to get a dead horse's eye, cut it up, look at the histology of the retina itself, and you can tell which cells are for which color.
Okay, and by understanding the equine vision, yeah. how does that contribute towards the understanding of the human vision?
I'm not really sure, actually. I mean, it's just interesting to know about other species anyway for our general knowledge. But I suppose what's interesting is the 350 degrees of vision the horse has.
Is that the only animal that has 350 degree vision?
No. The amphibians, frogs.
Yes, mammals.
Mammals is the only one. Yes. But we are talking about frogs and snakes. There's a whole new world altogether. You know, the frog can control its eye separately. One eye can turn left, one eye can turn right. Mm. They can do 360 degrees and turn behind them. It's fascinating.
So absolutely.
Amphibians are a whole different topic altogether, which we'll talk about later this year.
We'll wait for the next Chinese New Year to talk about them.
Yeah.
What message would you like to leave us with, Dr. Ken, on this Chinese New Year's Eve?
Oh, okay. Yeah. So basically, I was thinking about what my last words for the Chinese New Year. Yes, it's the year of the horse. I hope the listeners look forward like a horse would do and gallop forward positively, but maintain a certain degree of retrospective vision. So we need to look backwards and not repeat the mistakes of the past. 2013 has been very tumultuous, full of fiery talk and very little action. So we need to ignore those things in the past, look forward and not repeat the mistakes our country is doing.
Thank you very much for joining me today. Yeah. Dr. Kenneth Fong, consultant ophthalmologist and retinal surgeon. Happy New Year, Dr. Ken.
Thank you very much.
On The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.